Hey there, podcast lovers. My name is Mirta Hurtado Rivas. I'm the founder of LeaderCheng. We're back and better than ever. After a year-long hiatus, we've dusted off the microphones and we're ready to dive back into the world of insightful conversations. But wait, what were we up to during our break? Well, we had a mission. A mission to raise awareness about something near and dear to our hearts. Mental health. We teamed up with a group of incredible colleagues and together we embarked on a journey to shine light on this important topic. Now, with our mission somewhat accomplished, we are back to our regular monthly episodes. And let me tell you, we've got some amazing guests lined up. We're going to explore the paths that led these incredible individuals to the professions they excel in today. But that's not all. We're also diving headfirst into the captivating world of leadership and gender equality. We want to hear stories, experiences, and insights that will inspire and empower you. So buckle up, folks. Get ready for thought-provoking conversations, laughter, and maybe even a few surprises along the way. We're here to entertain and make you think. Join us on this exciting journey as we explore the stories behind the professions, delve into the realms of leadership, and champion gender equality. It's time to hit that play button and let the inspiration flow. Welcome back to my podcast. Welcome back to LeaderCheng. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of LeaderCheng. I'm very excited because today my guest is Jackie Stelling, founder of JMS Legal LLC and co-founder of Brand Action. Hi, Jackie. How are you?
Hi, Mirtha. Very good. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for accepting to be my guest today. I suggest we just dive in into the first questions and then get to know each other a bit better. We know each other, but this might be a good opportunity also to learn more about each other. And just if our listeners are wondering, Jackie and I had the pleasure of meeting in the context of her second standing pillar, Brand Action. Jackie, do you want to tell us a little bit about Brand Action before we start with the questions that are interested for LeaderCheng?
Absolutely. So Brand Action started after the Russian invasion of Ukraine last year. And there were a group of individuals within our international trademark community that said, we need to do something. This was about 6 weeks before the annual INTA meeting in Washington, D.C. And without it would take the entire podcast, but basically we said, let's bring people together. We ended up holding a fundraiser in DC that brought together over 300 people, over 20 firms that sponsored. We raised about $80,000 for two charities that whose work was specifically going to the people of Ukraine. And that was the origin. And it was a one-time thing. We really didn't think much beyond that. But when we saw how popular it was, excuse me, how much we got out of it, but also how much the community got out of it, and people were asking us, well, oh, is Brand Action going to do something at the next conference? And we realized that this was something that we needed to continue. So now fast forward, we've done two big annual events. We have ongoing fundraising initiatives, and we are now a formal 501c3 nonprofit here in the United States. This is really something that is just going to continue and has become my side gig and passion project.
Well, excellent. I'm really happy that you and the other co-founders did initiate this. It has been, for me at least, in my small contribution to the whole thing, I've felt that this is something that deserves our attention and time. So if anyone is listening out there and you haven't heard about Brand Action yet, please go check it up. There are, first of all, wonderful people and colleagues, but also are doing great stuff to help others that really need it. So with that, let's just dive into our questions. Jackie, I would be curious to know how you ended up, being a lawyer. And then maybe also if you could share as to why you decided to become an intellectual property lawyer.
Absolutely. So interestingly, and I come from a big family. I'm the youngest of eight children. And so people, Wow. Yes. And so people ask me, oh, is it a family of lawyers? And in fact, my parents were both teachers and most of my siblings are doctors. So I'm sort of looked at as the black sheep who decided to go into law. But I was always very interested in international relations, international happenings. And so when I went to university, I studied international relations. And at the university that I attended, many people either went into diplomacy, law, government. I mean, these were sort of the path. I honestly didn't know when I went to college that I wanted to be a lawyer. But I will say there was one professor that I had, I think my third year of undergrad, who was just absolutely phenomenal. And he taught a course in international law. And if it's any testament to the power of teachers and the power of one person and influence, he turned me on to it. And I really never looked back and decided that I would go into law.
Excellent. That's really interesting. And now I found the first thing that we have in common, because I studied international relations first. So I did study law, but my focus was on international relations, private and international law. And I went to the Diplomatic Academy of Vienna. So I was aiming at having a career in international organizations and diplomacy. But then I changed my path and ended up in intellectual property. So how did you decide then to pick IP?
Yeah. And so similarly, actually, I was in the School of Foreign Service at Georgetown. So it was also very much where people
were unbelievable.
diplomacy. But I knew I didn't want, after a bit there, I knew I didn't want to go into politics, certainly. And in fact, in between my undergrad and when I went to law school, I worked in a trade association in Washington, D.C. in their marketing department. And I discovered marketing and brands and all of these things and really got turned on to it, but had already applied to law school. And I thought, well, how could I somehow combine this new interest I didn't even know that I had with brands and this academic interest I have in the law? And so really, from the time I got to law school, didn't really know what intellectual property was. And at the time, for someone who did not have an engineering background, and this was sort of, not to date myself, but sort of early internet, people would assume that I had an engineering background. And if not, there was no way I was going to make it in IP. But I loved it so much. My thinking was, I'm either going to do intellectual property or I'm going to try to go into business and marketing. And so I was very, very focused within the law that was the area that was of interest to me.
Excellent. Yes, today it's almost, you don't think about it, right? But in those times when we were starting our careers, IP was very closely related to, scientific backgrounds. Right. And, it was more seen as a path to follow if you were an engineer or a chemist or a physicist or something, and those were, which just had general law degrees, you didn't think so much about what we call today soft IP, which is already, I think, sometimes a weird term to call it soft, because it's actually the one IP that remains forever is the trademark, right? But I think, yeah, today things have changed, and good that it has, because at least at my time at law school, we didn't have specific courses in IP. It's only afterwards that you specialized in IP. So it was it's changed tremendously since then. So Jackie, you have worked, today you work at obviously GMS Legal, but before that you work also in-house, and you have a long career, successful career. And I'm sure that you've come across different types of managers. And here at Leaderching, we like to talk about leadership, what people consider good leadership. And maybe you have some examples of people that kind of led a good impression on you, or some of them even you consider to be role models. Can you share a little bit?
Absolutely. So, I will say, when I left a law firm and went in-house for the first time, I happened to be, when I got that job, I was 8.5 months pregnant with my first child. And the woman who hired me and became my boss clearly could see, this was before virtual interviews, could clearly see my current condition, hired me anyway, knowing that she would have to wait because I had some things I needed to do on the personal side. And so about 4 months later, I joined her team. And from that very beginning, first of all, she and I still keep in touch. And, you know, she got a lot of questioning from her colleagues. She'd been looking to fill that position for a long time. And when she hired me, nobody there knew me specifically, but they said, well, are you sure she's actually going to come to work? Is this the right decision? What have you? And I just give her a lot of credit for, you know, finding somebody that she felt would be a good fit, taking the chance, you know, and also we need to support women, obviously. But it was, you know, but that she took that chance, which started us off in our sort of mentor-mentee relationship on such a positive note. So that was really terrific for my first, you know, beginnings of going in-house. It was also my first experience with a female manager. So that was quite positive. I had some other not so positive experiences, you know, along the way, but she was certainly a good one. But I do think, you know, with the leaders that I've come into contact with, both female, male, those that give room for their employees to grow, to make mistakes, to mm-hmm. not be chastised for making those mistakes, but using those as a learning opportunity so that they can get better the next time. That's huge, because especially in the big global companies, or which are really the only places that I worked when I was in-house, there would be the talk sometimes of take risks. You know, especially on the business side, take risks. Someone would take a risk, things wouldn't work out. And depending on how the manager was, if they all of a sudden were getting sort of in trouble for it, well, then that's not going to encourage people to take a risk. But versus those others that said, okay, well, you know, you have to accept sort of the results, but let's learn from it, let's move forward. And you develop better people that way, and they trust you, they feel supported. So I think that is incredibly important in a leader.
I think it's really interesting what you say, because, and I agree with you, not only then, but also today, one of the kind of slogans that you hear pretty much in every business meeting when you are a corporate person is, you know, take risk, right? You know, you need to take risk, you know, we need to be innovative. So in order to be innovative, obviously you need to try and fail, right? And you need to try and fail over and over. It's just not done once. And I think it's still not very easy to find managers that support that, because the organizations themselves are not always supportive of that, even though they say it.
Right.
When things don't go well.
Right.
Obviously, nobody is happy about it. Right.
Well, I would also say in the legal area, I mean, for us to, you know, obviously we take, you know, risk assessment and we're advising on risk. So, you know, given the nature of our job, we have to be careful about what we're, you know, how much risk are we taking versus how are we assessing the risk for the business? But I do think as long as you have the support of a leader where you can have a more junior person who is empowered to try to make those assessments for the business, but knowing that they have a more senior person who can help in the event they're starting to go down the wrong path, for example.
Yes, I think it's something that resonates with me, and maybe it's not really connected, but what you said about, you know, making mistakes leading to, you know, to growth, for me, it's really probably sometimes when you do things well, you're kind of perfecting something, right? You're kind of improving something that you know already. Mm-hmm. When you make mistakes, that's when you identify your gaps. That's where you identify that there is areas where you really can still learn. And those moments are never comfortable, right? Right? Because nobody likes to just do something wrong. But on the other hand, I think, at least for me, some of those moments that were painful and very uncomfortable are those moments that I really clearly remember as those moments where I understood
right.
something crucial for me to continue to grow or learn. I'm not sure if you have had that experience where you're like, oh gosh, this is painful, but at the same time, it really kind of points in a better direction.
Absolutely. Yeah. I can't think of a specific example of that right now, but I certainly can remember, I can feel the feelings that I had in those moments, which again, yes, very uncomfortable. But at the end, you come out a better lawyer, a better business person. Ultimately, if you lead people, a better leader. So Absolutely. And another thing I want to say about a leader, the ones that I've been really impressed with, those that are very transparent. So, you know, you be human, let your team see that you're human. Now, whether that's because you are struggling with something or you are, you know, the company is saying work-life balance, but the leader is always in the office and giving people a look if they leave early, that sort of a thing. But I worked at one company where the general counsel would send around an email saying, I'm headed off to my son's hockey game. You know, I'll be back online at 7. So he was giving people, it's not that we all needed to know he was going to that hockey game, but by, and I don't know how consciously he was doing this, but it allowed people to see, yes, it's okay to have balance. It's okay to also say, I have something, you know, I'm doing something else. And also knowing that person's at the top of the, you know, of the chain, and he's successful and he's still going to get the work done, but he's showing us, he's leading by example. And I think that's tremendous as well.
Thank you for sharing that. I think that's very important. Also, because when we are managers ourselves, we sometimes forget how much others are watching what we do, right? We underestimate sometimes that the mere fact of us doing something and how we're doing it has already kind of gives an indirect message. We sometimes don't even need to send that email, right? We sometimes just, when I grab my yoga mat and walk through the office, well, people know that I'm not going to a business meeting, right? They know I'm going to have that 1 hour break sometimes during the day, which I hope gives people the feeling, she's doing something for herself, exactly. For, you know, to take care of herself. Transparency. Yeah, I think that's very, very important. It also reminds me of one episode that we went through and we're sharing with in one of our mentoring circles, where people were asking me, how do you dare say no to a manager, right? Like, for instance, a general counsel of a company or a senior partner in the law firm, right? How do you dare say no? Or don't you drop everything and just do what the person is asking you, right? And I must say, I'm very lucky now in the current situation where I am, because my direct manager, she's the GC of the company, but she doesn't expect you to drop everything. And actually, I now have learned from her that even sometimes when she calls me and I'm in the meeting, I don't pick up the phone. Okay. Just I know, okay, if it's really urgent, she'll call a second time. So, and I think that shows, like, when I can share this with my team, that the highest person who sits on the board of this multinational understands that I can decide not to pick up the phone, even though she is who she is.
Right.
It should give my team members and other associates in the company the right also to not pick up the phone when I call. Exactly. Or anyone else calls who is also a manager, right? I think it's super important to just take away this sense of pressure,
yes,
which for me is so important. It's a little bit, you know, kind of sharing and making sure that your actions reflect that you care about people.
Right. I completely agree. And I do think now with, you know, the virtual world is even more important. I mean, yes, a lot of people are going into the office, but some are, you know, we're zooming in. It's different hours. Certainly if you're in a global company or a global clients, you know, it's different times of day. We could be on 24/7, and that's not healthy for anyone. And so, you know, I think it's really important. I mean, I have a solo practice right now, so I'm not in my current function. I'm not leading a team. But I purposely, when I'm on social media and I post about having gone to a conference, I'm very intentional that I always mention the fact that I went out for a run, or that, you know, I don't take an early morning meeting because it's so important to me, unless it's urgent, obviously, but it's so important to me to make sure that I'm taking care of myself physically and mentally. And I try to share that, so that hopefully that helps, you know, people to see, like, oh, she seems to be doing it, you know, she seems successful, and look, she's able to, you know, to have some balance in her life.
So maybe a question to you, because, you know, you now are doing also brand action, which I understand can take also substantial time when you are preparing for specific events. How do you manage then, you know, to keep a healthy balance between, you know, your practice, you know, brand action, and then the usual run or, you know, activity that you do to take care of yourself? How do you manage then all of that together?
Sure. Well, I will admit that it's currently a little bit of a struggle. The reason for the struggle, though, is because I'm so passionate about brand action that I have to rein myself in. My client work gets done. My clients are taken care of for sure. But I'm sleeping less. I do make sure to work out all the time. That doesn't suffer. The only thing that's suffering right now a little bit is my amount of sleep. But I'm always conscious of all of that. And if I find myself where the balance is off a bit, I try to take a step back and figure out ways that I can regain it. Now, and sometimes, look, if we're getting ready for a big fundraiser, the balance isn't going to be there, but that's okay. It's a moment in time. And again, for me, the reward that comes out of it is totally worth it. I mean, everything that I'm doing right now between brand action and my job and my family and my, like, these are all things that I'm so happy about. And so it's a lot easier to figure out how to juggle them when they're all good things.
Yeah. Do you rely also on kind of a circle of close people that will from time to time hold up the mirror to you? Is there someone, you know, either in your family or your friends or in brand action that sometime will tell you, Jackie, slow down, try to find some time, you know, to relax or so? Do you have something like that?
Well, the funny thing is, yeah, well, with brand action in particular, our team, we're a team of about 7 people, and we have almost weekly calls depending on what's going on. But there are, I'll be sending emails or WhatsApp notes all hours of the day, days of the week. And then there'll be a certain point in time where they come in and they're like, go to bed. but also in seriousness, like checking in to be like, are you like, can we take anything off of your plate? Do you need help? Which is wonderful. I mean, we're all very transparent. Each of us is the first to raise our hands when we're like, guys, I can't do this additional thing if somebody else is taking off. So just being open and honest, certainly. And I would say outside of that, you know, if I'm not spending enough time with my kids, you know, they'll call me on that, or at least from their perception that I'm not spending enough time. And I love that. And I love the fact that they still want to spend time with me. So, you know, I certainly have those conversations and try to figure that one out.
Sounds very good. And probably you've raised them well if they're doing that, because that also means that, you know, they can bring stuff like that up with you. You mentioned one word, which for me, it's really important, and because we talked about this and also in other with other guests here in this podcast, is really the capability of asking for help, mm-hmm. right? As you said, it's not only being open and transparent in the ways you work, but it's also being transparent about when it is that you're struggling yourself and that you need others to chip in. Have you always felt that you were comfortable with asking for help also in your previous roles or so? Or is it something that you've learned with maturity, as we say?
Probably a little bit in between. You know, part of my personality, I've always been, maybe to a fault sometimes, very comfortable to say sort of how I'm feeling about the situation in a diplomatic way, of course. I was part of some really terrific legal departments throughout most of my in-house experience. And so even though in some of those instances, I was actually only one or two IP professionals sitting in the building, those around me, the other lawyers, the paralegals, you know, we were such a tight-knit group that, you know, we could definitely, I did feel like just collectively, if anybody needed help or was overwhelmed, you know, we could say something, or, you know, if we were overwhelmed by what was happening with the business, we at least had each other to sort of lean on and, you know, have for support. So I do think I've been fortunate enough to always feel that way, but I've become with experience and what have you, more and more comfortable. Like if I feel like I need help or I feel like it's too much, I know for myself that it is. I don't question that. I just, you know, that is what it is. And so I have to figure out how we're going to, you know, accomplish what needs to be accomplished without me completely being stressed out, to get there.
Yeah, I think that's an important point, right? Because I think some of us, so for me, it took, I wasn't comfortable at all asking for help. So it took quite a while. But I also think you mentioned it's important to not question oneself, right? So once you get to know yourself well, and once you are aware that you're struggling, then that's just how it is. And then, you know, you should be comfortable enough to ask for help. Thanks for sharing that. I turn to a different topic, which is also very close to what we're trying to achieve here at LeaderCheck, which is really raising awareness about, you know, gender equality. And I just start, you know, by asking you, do you feel like, you know, things are in a good place, you know, in general about, you know, in the environment you're in? Because, you know, each of us is in a different environment. We are in different countries and obviously different locations, companies, cultures, and so on. What is your feeling about how you see things in your environment? What is it that women still need to achieve, or where is it that we still need to help them?
Yeah, it's interesting. So here in the US, on the one hand, you know, a lot of our policies are very, you know, gender neutral, equality, what have you. I'm seeing more and more women who are getting into leadership positions, which is fantastic. Certainly, you know, much more so than when I was starting out. I have seen within those companies women at the highest, you know, CEO level. So I see real examples of women in leadership. What I will say, though, that I feel is a real problem, and I don't know, we need the collective support of the men, the women, the companies, policy, what have you, is in the US we have, if I can say, a terrible maternity leave, you know, it's very, very short. Mm-hmm. Women, it's 6 weeks.
Wow.
I was fortunate enough, because of being in the profession I was in, I got a little bit more than that, but still comparatively to a lot of other countries, very small, very short. And besides the maternity leave portion, when it comes to women with children and as a family making decisions about how you're raising the children, if you have two working parents, how is that going to work out? And what I do see that is, if the decision is made where, let's say, the woman decides that the woman is going to stay home for a bit to take care of the young children and then go back into the workforce, a lot of times they enter back into the workforce, you know, let's say the man has been continuing in the job, and I left at year six, and, you know, I come back at year seven. Her pay, her whatever, is coming back at year six, and the man is now year seven. And I've had conversations with very progressive men, what have you, and saying, well, that's, you know, we haven't figured out how to deal with that yet, because it is not fair all around for there to be a penalty for staying home with children. There needs to be an acknowledgement that is, you know, that when you come back, it's you've sort of put some time in. So I don't know how and when we're going to get there, but I do find that to me is a little bit of an issue. And I would also say that certainly with the pandemic, and I can, you know, I have a husband who is, you know, very supportive and involved, but, you know, when you're home, when we were all home during that time, you know, we saw that most of the burden of the children, school-aged children, young children, even if you had two working parents, it mostly fell on the women, either because they just, that was how they felt, that's how their family dynamic was, whatever it was. And so it was a clear indication that, you know, there's a lot of positive things in there too, but certainly from a professional world, we haven't quite cracked that nut yet to figure out how to support, you know, that family dynamic, as well as allow women to advance, you know, in the workplace.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that, because here in Europe, we have a lot of debate around what we call the emotional burden of kind of managing a family. So even when we consider today that there is more, let's say, sharing of chores,
right,
and, you know, it's not all on the woman anymore, one of the things that here we continue to see very clearly is that the one person kind of knowing by heart, you know, the names of the friends of your children, you know, when a special event at school is taking place, the preparations for that, buying the birthday gifts for your the little mates, or the pediatrician's phone number, or a whole lot of those details that you need to know to run the family are still solely in the responsibility of the woman. Right. So here we're talking a lot about how do you, you know, and we're talking about those situations when we have a family where both can work and have decided to build both their careers and so on, where this emotional charge of having everything in your head, you know, preparing all those things, knowing, you know, when your mother-in-law has a birthday that you need to send, you know, a birthday card or whatever, all of those things remain with the women. And it appears that that's something that's just like grows like that normally.
Yeah.
It's not a decision of the partner.
No.
Who says like, I don't want to deal with this. It's just like, it kind of happens.
Right. I would also say what's very important is, you know, there are more and more men who want to help in those roles and those responsibilities. Mm-hmm. And there are less and less, but still more stigma around them if they,
yes,
if the child is sick and they're staying home. Well, why isn't mm-hmm. the mother staying home? So it's not just an issue for, you know, supporting women. It's supporting men who actually want to, you know, change that dynamic. It's, you know, equally important.
No, definitely. I hear you there. And when you hear, for instance, that someone is staying at home, right, on purpose longer, after a child has been born or whatever, or taking even time off to stay with the children, I think men face a lot of criticism still now. It's like, that they are not really ambitious, that they don't want to have a career, or a lot of nonsense that's being said in that respect. So I fully agree with you. Well, that's fantastic, Jackie. I have pretty much raised all the questions I was interested in sharing with you today. I would like to congratulate you once more, you and, you know, the other founders of Brand Action. I think what you're doing is fantastic. I also think, as you said, it's not something only that's good for, you know, the associations that you're supporting, but I think it's really a way is to become active oneself, right? Because one of the questions that I ask myself is, what can I do, right? How can I help, right? When you're facing those very difficult situations around the globe, it's sometimes very difficult because one feels so distanced,
right?
Even though for us here in Europe, it's very close, right? The war is very, very close. So I think you found a way as to how to gather the IP community around something that's really valuable. So thanks a lot. And thanks for, you know, having allowed me to kind of play a small role in there during the Singapore event. It was really nice to be part of it. And thanks for being my guest today. It's really been a pleasure to get to know you a bit better. And I hope that our listeners enjoyed this conversation as much as I did.
Thank you so much, Mirth. I really appreciate it. It's great talking to you.
Thank you so much, everyone. Stay tuned and see you soon. Bye. And that's a wrap on another incredible episode. We hope you enjoyed this insightful conversation as much as we did. But before you go, I have a small favor to ask. If you found this episode valuable and thought-provoking, I kindly ask you to hit that like button and share it with your network. By doing so, you'll help us reach even more people who can benefit from these inspiring stories and discussions. But our journey doesn't end here. We're not just a podcast, we are a community. We invite you to join us on LinkedIn, where we share valuable posts and resources on mental health. Together, we can continue the conversation, support one another, and make a positive impact. Remember, listening to others' opinions is not just about hearing different perspectives. It's about fostering dialogue, understanding, and empathy. It's about creating a world where diverse voices are valued and respected. So let's keep the conversation going. Let's inspire, uplift, and empower one another. Together, we can make a difference. Thank you for being a part of our podcast family. Stay tuned for more incredible episodes coming your way. Until next time,
Keep listening, keep learning, and keep spreading the love. Take care, and remember, your voice matters.